This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. Normally, we'd be joined in the studio by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello. But he's not here. Of course, I do have over there, though, Mr. Arif Roos, the man with the news. Hey, Arif, how are you?
All right. How are you, Richard?
I'm pretty good. Feeling a little stuffed right now.
Yeah, I know.
Big lunch today, and it seems to be not moving anywhere.
It's going to be a big weekend.
It is going to be a big weekend. Concentrating on the show for a little while, we've got some fascinating discussion about the National Transport Policy. And I mean that honestly. I do.
I sense the bit of sarcasm.
No sarcasm whatsoever. And then, of course, we've got some local car launches. And I say by one.
Yep.
And then, of course, we have a car review a little bit later on. And I know this is something he's excited about. The BMW 330i G20.
Yes, it is. Super excited about that one.
Come on then, Mr. Arif Roos, the man with the news. Get us started on the National Transport Policy 2019 to 2030.
Right, so National Transport Policy.
I noticed there's a deep breath, first and foremost.
It's going to be a long one. I think we should start with what they say the vision is, which is to develop a sustainable transport sector that accelerates economic growth and supports the well-being of the rakyat in line with an advanced nation status.
Okay.
So everybody's been discussing this quite a lot. And basically, I think that the top point of it is it recognizes that Malaysians living in KL spend an average of, 10% of their disposable income on transportation compared to a city like Tokyo, which would be 4%. And it also said that Malaysians are more reliant on private transportation. I mean, obviously.
Well, it doesn't take a genius to work that out, does it?
Exactly. I mean, you slap huge tariffs on cars where people have to spend on cars because there's no public transportation development and all that stuff.
And when the public transportation has been developed, it doesn't go to the areas that you actually live in, and you have to, the last mile becomes the last 4 miles.
Exactly.
It's a problem.
So this is exactly the issue that this national transport policy for the next 11 years that they want to solve. So we at BFM, we've spoken a lot about this. We've taken in experts. Daniel's also been on one of the shows on Pressing Matters. Just to summarize everything into 3 points, this whole policy report thing is basically largely about the economics, the industry, the agencies and the industry players, and how everything's going to change in that sector. And the term evidence-based is used a lot. And generally, I feel like this whole report is quite holistic.
Evidence-based, generally, all you'd have to do is go outside, stand on any road in any part of KL at any time of day and have a good look around. You can see that the traffic doesn't flow perfectly.
Nope.
There's potholes everywhere.
Yep.
Crossing a road is a dangerous situation at best.
Yep.
Footpaths, do they even exist in most of KL?
No. You know, I believe somebody posted up a picture of a bunch of pavements that lead back into the road where traffic is.
If you're trying to cross the road anywhere near Mid Valley, for example, and you've seen that U-turn place there where the bridge is no longer open as well because it collapsed a couple of years ago. You have to take your life into your own hands just to cross the road there. Public transportation is one of these huge things that we really need to develop here in KL and in Malaysia, of course. And this is what happens when you develop cities and towns that are based around people using private transportation and not public transportation.
Yep, and there hasn't been a lot of communication, I believe, between state governments, agencies, and generally the people.
Right.
So point one of what they are trying to do with this new national transport policy is to strengthen coordination amongst agencies, industry players, and, to include the local governments all around Malaysia as part of public transport planning and development. Mm. So a couple of things that they are going to do is to improve regulations, to update them, to look forward to the future, update them to international standards, as well as enforcement.
Right.
And also, they're going to start building a centralized data center that can be accessed by agencies and enforcement. So it's a big thing.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
It's 2019.
Yeah.
And this is something that I'm not blaming the current government or the administration or whatever. Yeah. I'm going to blame the previous government, who should have had the foresight to think that something like this would be happening in the years to come.
Yeah. And, we even struggle to find up-to-date data though, because like if you do a bit of research in terms of like the policies and all the other things that surround us, like even population data, it's difficult to find anything nearer to 2017.
Because what will happen is they'll go into an office somewhere and you'll hear a lot of this.
Yes.
Just let me, hold on a minute, let me just find it. You know, instead of it being clickety-clack of keyboards, it's paper-based.
The fact that they are actually finally starting to do something, that is something to look forward to,
good,
I suppose.
Good.
Yeah. The second thing that they are largely going to be focusing on is the rails. The train networks here, so they are going to be upgrading rail services to enable more commercial and freight transport to ease road congestion. And they did give away a certain data that interested me a lot. And you know, all around Malaysia, you see a lot of big, huge lorries transporting this and that, and they're everywhere, even in our inner cities, right? And apparently, this is because only 30% of our rail capacity is being used for this.
Now, I mean,
30%.
Why only 30%? Have they explained why it's only at 30%?
Nope, they just left it there.
That's just crazy.
But, you know, I mean, upgrading this also means additional capacity for KTM and Interrail services, which is quite good. It feels like this whole report, they are focusing a lot on the industry players and how they're going to develop that, which will in turn benefit the Rakyat, which, you know, I feel like maybe it should work hand in hand.
They
should
think right.
So, I mean, recently, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad said that the focus for the public is to be on rail. And the goal is to reach China and Japan levels of efficiency and accessibility. Whether we will reach that remains to be seen, but it is a goal.
Well, you've got to have a goal. I mean, you've got to work towards something. And if you look at how, I mean, Japanese rail is like on another planet. It's an entirely different thing. I mean, I was in Taiwan recently. I mean, not Japan, of course, but Taiwan. And I was so bored because it was so efficient, and I timed how long it stayed. The train actually stayed at each subway station.
Yeah.
15 seconds. That was it. Stopped, 15 seconds, enough time for people to get on and get off, doors closed, and it left. You know, and they were on time every single time.
That sounds like a pipe dream to us. I mean, even if we don't reach the goals of China, Japan, Taiwan, the main idea here for the report, it said, was to reduce travel time compared to private vehicle travel,
right,
which is the main point of public transportation in any case.
Yeah.
They also want to start providing better access to transport services for the disabled, the elderly, and perhaps for parents with strollers.
I mean, it would be great to see ramps going up and down some of the stations. I've seen a few, you know, and over particularly the newer ones, of course. But there are still some stations out there that have no access for people with disabilities. I do apologize. That was my fault.
Moving on. Also, there's this big thing that they are going to start a centralized payment system to improve public transport use, which I don't know about you, but I feel like that's touch and go in any way.
Sounds a bit like it, right?
So what are they going to change?
I don't know.
We'll have to wait and find out. The third point that was brought up was reducing road accidents. So, of course, it comes with a lot of things like education and like improving awareness and using new modern techniques to teach people about road safety. But they're also going to start improving the safety and security of vehicles, which I believe we have, well, not never, but rarely done because, you know, all around the world, in the US, the EU, in some parts of Asia, they, you know, they have restrictions. Like, backup cameras are a necessity.
A necessity, yeah.
In the US, so you can't sell a car without a backup camera. That is the law. So I hope it is something like that. And then the second point of reducing road accidents is that they're going to start introducing a safety star rating and requirements for commercial vehicles and heavy goods vehicles, which is quite good, both new and used, which is very, very much needed because we see a lot of lorries that really shouldn't be on the road today.
Yes.
Those are the three points. But like I said previously, we BFM has done a lot of talks about this, and I've quickly summarized the common themes among the experts and what they said. And what they said is that the report does say a lot of what's and why, you know, the national transport policy is this way, but hasn't exactly outlined the hows. Mm. So the Evening Edition spoke to the former SPAD boss, SPAD boss, Pressing Matters and the Morning Brief. They all spoke to policy and transport experts, and they all say the same thing. It's all just what's, why's, but no hows. Are we going to introduce new guidelines about pavements, about how wide they're going to be? Are we going to start defining roads, what is actually a motorway and what is actually not? Because we often see big, huge, wide roads that you know, drivers treat like motorways, but they are actually residential roads.
And we see undertaking, overtaking, and side-taking.
Yes.
You know, it's not just outlining a whole bunch of things. We've seen that a lot. We've heard about that a lot. You know, accidents happen because enforcement is not there. You know, mm-hmm. and I think that's something that needs to be done. I think part of this whole new transport policy is that we need to get police out there policing, you know, particularly road police. Somebody is involved in an accident or they're driving dangerously. They need to be pulled over or taken off the road. I have never seen anybody be pulled over for dangerous driving. I have seen people be pulled over for a whole bunch of other reasons, but for not necessarily for dangerous driving.
That is true. The other thing that this report, I feel like, seems to miss is that there's this huge focus on rails. They spoke a lot about improving infrastructure for our ports and as well as, you know, utilizing air cargo, but they seem to be ignoring the use of the important use of buses and BRTs.
Right.
I believe, one of the big things that was said in this report and thing that we've been seeing in a long time, perhaps 2 months with this campaign that we've been doing Helmets On, is that 2/3 of road accidents involve motorbikes. Mm. And I feel like, you know, developing little towns with accessible buses and efficient routes and utilizing buses to their
and a timetable that actually works.
Yeah, that will definitely solve the first and last mile transport thing. And, you know, it will negate the use of bikes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've written here the UK example. I don't know if this is true, but when I was in the UK, when you go to all these small little towns, nobody really needs a car or a bike.
True.
Because the buses are so efficient, the pedestrian walkways are so well connected.
Yeah.
That you don't need to have a bike at all.
I mean, the way in which they've done it, it's quite clever for the major cities and some of the second tier towns. You have buses that run on the main routes, on the main roads, for example. But then you have the smaller buses that will go into the suburbs and do all of the little picking up of the grannies and the uncles and everybody else, and then bring them onto the main route. So everybody is covered.
Yeah.
Admittedly, those buses that go into the smaller areas are not as regular as the major bus routes, but they exist.
Yep.
You know, I mean, here you go to a part of PJ or Damansara or whatever, you have to walk miles to get on a bus.
Yep. You know? And the other thing I feel like, you know, when they were talking about moving freight transport and commercial transport onto rails, that is definitely a good thing. Mm. Like I said, 30% only utilize rail capacity. But I feel like we should think about at least to introduce time-based commercial service movements around the city.
It's just a dream, Harry. It's a dream.
It shouldn't be, because
I want to get on a bus at 10:15 to know that I'm arriving at my office at 11 o'clock. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to see any delivery vans around peak hours because, you know, it's just clogging up the streets.
Yeah.
I believe in different countries, different cities like Tokyo, even Beijing, London, they all do the deliveries off-peak hours at midnight or in the early mornings. They do the trash pickings during that time. I believe we should, you know, introduce something like that. And there's the other thing as well. Third national car, right?
Oh, my word. We've only just got there.
We've only just got there. We've introduced this huge national transport policy, which will last until 2030. Mm. That's 11 years. Mm. But we are also thinking of introducing a third national car. Mm-hmm. And for the third national car to survive, we need to sell more cars.
That's right.
Why didn't...
No, the sigh says it all.
Yeah. I don't think we should go much into this until, you know, we can actually have a proper conversation about this.
Now, with that in mind, do you want to do car launches now, or do you want to wait until a little bit after the break? What would you like to do?
Well, let's go after the break, actually, yeah.
I think I need a bit of fresh air.
Yeah.
ladies and gents, you are tuned in to Cruise Control. Believe it or not, it's the car show here on BFM, although we are talking about the National Transport Policy. We've spoken about timetables and things like roads that run on time. It's just a pipe dream. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with Arif Roos. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is the very emotional Cruise Control this evening. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio, of course, by
Arif Roos.
Just before the break, we were speaking about the national transport policy. We spoke to you about the vision. We gave you the key points and some reflections. We're going to move on before we get too engrossed emotionally and talk about some car launches.
A car launch, actually.
A car launch, indeed.
Yep. Today, actually, Honda revealed the brand new Honda Jazz, the 2020 model. Limited in pictures for now, but
it's cute.
It's very, very cute. Got big bug eyes now. And it comes with 5 new variants, which is quite interesting.
I love how you've kind of broken this down. So you've got, you give me the first two.
Yeah.
So you've got basic, home, which is color coordinated.
Yep.
Ness, which is sporty-ish.
Yes.
Lux, which has leathery bits.
Yes.
Crossstar, rugged.
Yes.
And a new hybrid system.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're creating a Tinder profile for cars.
It does. Like, I mean, I had to put all of those like additional stuff because it's pretty hard to understand, isn't it? Basic, home, Nest, Lux, and Crossstar. That kind of sounds like a
Tinder profile, Arif. Yes.
Yeah. More details will be revealed as the weeks go on. Honda did just reveal that where Daniel is at the Tokyo Motor Show. So we'll know more when he comes back.
How does he get these gigs? I don't know. Right, we should probably have a car review. And I know you're quite fond of this car, aren't you?
I love it so much.
It's the BMW 330i G20, and he's titled it The Return of the King.
Yes,
you're so predictable sometimes. Come on, tell me all about it then. Tell me why you love it.
I'm gonna set up.
Stop
first.
Gushing, all right?
Yeah.
Before we even start.
So the 3 Series, first introduced in 1975, and until now it's been known as the ultimate driving machine. Uh-huh. The definitive formula for the small, fun, premium sedan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has touring car pedigree. The E30 M3, which was introduced in 1987, is one of the most successful touring cars that has ever existed in the world. It has, you know, all throughout the years, 50-50 weight distribution, a balanced chassis, and exciting engines right across the range. And, you know, it comes in many different forms, coupe, convertible, wagon, or a sedan, so enough room for the family. Like I said, you know, the E30, the most successful touring car in the world, the E36, which was introduced in the late 90s, is now a cult classic. Everybody's buying them cheap and going racing with them. Then there's the E46, the best-selling 3 Series ever made. 550,000 E46 3 Series were sold in a year.
Wow.
That's almost more than our entire national car
sales.
Nice. And then, you know, there's the E90, which is the one I have, which I feel like is the best of both worlds.
Uh-huh.
A slight modernity, and you still got the classic fun hydraulic steering and all that stuff. And then you have the F30, the previous generation, which is the one that you see everywhere in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what BMW had planned for this car, which was, you know, to build a 3 Series that was democratic. Everybody could buy
uh-huh.
it. It was bigger.
And what you mean by democratic is boring.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
It was bigger, safer. It was slightly more powerful, and it had a lot more technology stuffed into it. So a result, wider audience and improved sales figures. But it didn't eclipse the E46, which was sold in the year 2000. With all of this, trying to appeal to a wider audience, of course, you would lose a bit of the fun factor. And it's not saying like the fun factor is all lost. The ride quality, the steering, the fun factor, the performance, the quality, everything was par for the course. But it was the first move to the electric power steering, which meant, you know, there was a bit of steering feel loss, which wasn't quite what BMW had intended. It wasn't quite what anybody had intended. Even Porsche suffered from this. So it wasn't that engaging to drive. Which meant that other car companies like Audi and Mercedes, when they were making the A4 and the C-Class respectively,
they went, let's not make that mistake.
They, couldn't because everybody was basically starting from zero. So they were making the A4 and the C-Class drive perhaps a little bit better than the 3 Series, and their cars were definitely built better than the previous 3 Series, which was one of the main issues of the previous generation, which, you know, you just sit in the interior and there's cheap plastics everywhere and everything's just not quite the premium touch. And, you know, it lost its edge. The Kias, the Genesis, the Infinities, they all caught up and it blurred the line between what's premium and what's
not. Right.
So suddenly, the crown for the best small executive sedan was up for grabs. And I believe a lot of people preferred the current C-Class over the previous 3 Series. So now comes the new 3 Series.
Dun, dun, dun.
G20, the 2019 model. I'm going to start with the exterior. It's definitely an evolution rather than a revolution. It keeps the same silhouette of the old car. In the dark, you might see the same looks, but it's, you know, the creases define the car differently, so it looks different, but the same.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, you can obviously look at the photos on our Instagram.
It's from the same mold.
So, yeah, from the same mold.
But they've softened parts of it, I feel.
Like that one friend who suddenly started working out.
That's right. Yes.
And then you step, I mean, it's a very, very beautiful car that grows on you.
Right.
But then you go into the interior. The build quality has improved tremendously. There's no cheap plastics everywhere. Everything's soft touch. It feels like there's a little bit piece of foam in everything. Mm. It's just so soft and lovely to sit in. There's lots of leather. And, you know, even though it might seem a bit boring compared to the Mercedes and the Audi, I feel like it grows on you just because of the quality of everything. Nothing rattles. Nothing shakes. You try to wriggle something, nothing rattles inside it. The big thing inside it, of course, is the new 11-ish inch display in the middle.
And wait. When you say that, bigger or smaller than 11 inches?
Well, slightly smaller.
Uh-huh. That's why you said 11-ish.
11-ish, yes. Uh-huh. So that houses BMW's new operating system. They're calling operating system 7. Creative.
Wow.
It has so many functions that are, you know, super easy to navigate around. And you can click this, click that. You can touchscreen. You can even use a gesture control, which this car isn't equipped with. And then there's the digital cluster, which I've complained a lot about because the rev counter, the tachometer, goes the other way around, counterclockwise. I hate it, but I got used to it. And honestly, it frees up a huge space right in the middle of the screen for your navigation. So you don't really need a heads-up display anymore. Then there's rear seat room, which was quite interesting to me because it's a lot of space. And if you've sat in probably a 5 Series or an E-Class or an Accord maybe 15 years ago, 2005 model, something like that, it's similar in space. So this is actually a really, really big car.
Mm.
Now I'm going to move on to why I feel like this is probably the best car I've ever driven. Not the best car I've ever driven, but this is probably the most fun I've had this year. The first thing is the power. It's the same engine as the previous F30 3 Series, and it's the same 2-liter turbo inline 4 engine, but they've tweaked it a little bit to make it a bit more responsive, a bit more efficient and economical and cleaner to run as well. But they've paired it with a new ZF 8-speed automatic transmission that I believe is the same one that they put in their M cars. So it's really quick and even blips and pops and crackles at you. And it's, honestly, when you put your foot down, it just goes like a train.
Right.
And it goes way beyond illegal speed limits. You could go for miles and miles and miles. And the best part, these new cars, it just sips fuel around town as well. So you can blast off at the lights, but you could still cruise around.
Cruise around if you wanted to.
Yeah. It's an excellent mile eater, just to conclude in that part. The other thing is, the biggest criticism of the old car, the old 3 Series, was that the steering.
Mm.
Like I mentioned, the first move to electric power steering, it was a bit slow, it was sluggish, you couldn't feel much from the road. It wasn't engaging enough. This one is very, very quick. It's very direct, and it's still got that classic BMW weighted steering wheel, which other cars don't seem to have. And, you know, it's a car with massive amounts of grip. With this M Sport suspension, it keeps the car very flat and composed along the turn. And it might understeer a little bit, but you just have to be a bit more brave to keep your foot on the gas. And then it feels like the car's like, oh, okay, I'll bring you around the corner the way you want it. Mm-hmm. It's very, very fun. And it's very, very typical BMW, just like we were used to.
Right. I know you love it.
Yeah.
I know you've got loads more to say about it. You're going to have to fill this in, though, on Instagram or something else.
Yeah.
And move on to stuff like the stuff you don't like, Arif.
Yeah, okay. So this car is equipped with the M Sport suspension. It comes with the M Sport package, so you got the visuals, but you also get the wheels. which are 18-inch, and you get the M-Sport suspension, as I said. So it's a bit harsher. Some might feel that the C-Class or the A4 is way more comfortable to be around town, but I mean, it's subjective, right? Comfort. To some people, it might be okay. To me, it was okay, but to some of my passengers, they felt like it was a bit harsh. The other thing that I think a lot of people complain, a lot of auto journalists complain, is the fact that this car is a mid-spec. So you don't get the sunroof. You don't get a lot of autonomous systems. You don't even get blind spot monitoring. So it's not well-specced, just to put it that way, compared to its competitors. Like the C-Class, you get all of that. The Audi A4, which is imported unit, you get all of that. Somehow BMW Malaysia didn't think that was important. And honestly, in this day and age, blind spot monitoring is essential.
Especially here.
Especially here, with the motorbikes buzzing around.
Can I give you a 5-point inspection?
Yeah.
Okay, then. So who are its competitors?
Direct competitors, Mercedes C300. That costs 305,000 ringgit. Audi A4, 315,000 ringgit. And the BMW 3 Series, it costs 290,000 ringgit.
What's good about it? I think we've had some of that already.
Yep.
What do you think is lacking? We've had a bit of that. Now, I'll move on to number 4, though. Does the spec let it down? And final, to wrap up with, has the 3 Series got its crown back?
Does the spec let it down? The spec sheet, yes. But for the price you pay, I mean, it's 15,000 ringgit cheaper than the equivalent Mercedes C-Class. So you have to ask yourself, can you drive without the blind spot monitoring system, all the autonomous stuff?
And we have been doing for the longest time.
Yeah. But, you know, it's 15 grand cheaper. So I feel like it doesn't. But to most people who buy their cars based on the spec sheets and the price, this might let it down a little bit. Whether the 3 Series has got its crown back, I think other automotive journalists will agree with me in saying, yes, it has. Partly because it's newer, but mostly because it's more engaging. It's a car with more everything compared to the others.
Ladies and gents, I'm sorry we had to cut the review short. Of course, Arif has a lot more thoughts about this. Probably you should follow him on Instagram or follow us on Instagram, where you can fill in some of the gaps that we've had for the review, of course. Our Instagram is
at BFM Cruise Control.
You have been tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We spoke about the national transport policy, some of the key points, some of the reflections, and some of our emotion. We wrapped up with the feature there, of course, the BMW 330i G20. According to Arif and some other journalists, it has got its crown back. We'll be back same time, same place next week here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.